Welcome on into Friday's edition of Kildare Focus. In just a moment, we will be talking to Owen Maloney. He's a breaking news journalist at independent.ie, and we'll be tracking the HSE cyber attack and all of the attendant issues and results. We'll hear from Dr. Brendan O'Shea, Newbridge GP and councillor in the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District. Anne Connolly will be talking about that region and indeed Kildare LEA's high COVID-19 incidence rate, and also comments by Councillor Connolly that a potential lockdown for Kildare, whether or not the people of the county will be able to cope, that isn't necessarily on the cards at the moment. We'll hear from journalist Conor Feehan. He has the top five scans of which we all need to be aware of and how to avoid them. And as you've been hearing on our news bulletins, the devastating news for many that the trade element of the National Ploughing Championships due to take place in September in Rathanisca will not proceed. I'll be joined by Anna May McHugh, Managing Director of the National Ploughing Championships, on that. As always, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with your comments, your requests, your dedications by text or WhatsApp to 0833 97 97 97. You can email studio at kfmradio.com, or you can tweet us at KFM Radio.
Your station, your music, KFM.
First, though, I am joined on the line by Irish Times contributor and indeed a mental health professional, Pádraig O'Moran. Pádraig, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Ciara. Thank you.
You've written, I think, in the Irish Times, so it's a very timely article, coming as it does just before the first weekend of as near to full reopening of the economy and, more importantly, society as we're likely to see for the next few weeks anyway. And it is confronting the hurts of a long, tough year of lockdowns. And What inspired you to write this?
What inspired me was that I had seen some research from the UK on the question of forgiveness and what kind of forgiveness tends to work best for those who are doing the forgiving. And I'd also, been aware that there were a lot of heightened emotions and so on during, or have been a lot of heightened emotions during the lockdown. Things might have been said and done that people either regret or should regret. And of course, there was also the thing that there may be people who got COVID because somebody else was careless and they know who that somebody else was. And so I thought that something on this theme of forgiveness might be of help to people. And especially because it's a difficult one, because forgiveness seems to, a lot of research shows that it's good for the one doing the forgiving. It means you don't really have to go on dwelling on the details of the thing that happened. You can kind of let it go. But on the other hand, there are things that happen, first of all, that it's almost impossible to forgive, and that you could not reasonably try to, push somebody into forgiving another person for something. What they found in the UK that led me to think this was that they found that the kind of forgiving that's sort of best for the one doing the forgiving is where you develop a kind of a sense of understanding about the person who did whatever they did, and a certain empathy for them. Now, that would be okay if you're forgiving your child because they did something other,
And they're four, and I mean, that's all that could be expected. I often think that when we discuss forgiveness as a society, there's still that lingering little niggle in the back of a lot of people's minds that to forgive is weak.
Yeah, there is that, although I think it's probably a pretty strong thing to do.
I think so too.
There is that thing, I should get revenge or something. It's probably a very old feeling that we have. But I suppose forgiveness is as old as the hills too. And there is this feeling, we should get revenge, but there is a price that it exacts. If it kind of takes over, if it takes over your life and destroys your happiness. And sometimes forgiving even horrible things is a better way forward. But it's not an easy thing. I mean, developing a sense of empathy and a sense of understanding for the person who did this thing, well, it depends on what they did, And suppose they themselves don't have any sense of guilt or sense of responsibility for it. So it can't be easy. And there are some things that cannot be forgiven, and that people shouldn't be pushed into trying to forgive.
I often think, particularly, Pádraig, in the context of the last 14 months, because it's unprecedented in any of our lives, it behoves all of us to be a little bit perhaps more flexible with others, as we would hope that they would be with us, because there's, you know, forgiveness about, you know, a transgression, minor or otherwise, in day-to-day life. It's very difficult then to consider healing or moving a relationship forward, whatever the manner or tone of that relationship, if you can't see the person to talk to them, if you can't hug them, if you can't travel to where they are, yeah. That rift then deepens.
Yes, it does, of course. Yes, because the presence of the other person can make a huge difference. But, you know, one thing is that even if two people, let's say, split up, whether that was during the lockdown or not, if one person and one person is not forgiving the other person for whatever it was that they did or said, the trouble is that then that person, they're kind of locked into all that. They're going over and over it. They're talking about nothing else. They're going over the details of it, and they are kind of imprisoned by it. Mm. And they may free themselves more fully by forgiving the other person without doesn't mean they have to get back with them or let them into the house again, but by forgiving them in the sense of, I am not going to keep going over the details of this. I'm putting it to one side. I'm not looking for revenge. I'm letting it go in that sense. You won't be coming back into my life, but I'm not going to dwell in the memories of this all the time. Either.
And that's a learned response. For the vast majority of us, we aren't born knowing how to do that. We may not pick it up throughout our lives. And if that's something that you're trying to do, it's a hard row to hoe.
It's terribly hard to do, and it takes time. I think it takes a good bit of time. Sometimes the time never comes when you can forgive the person. And that's fine. And one person who does a lot of work on forgiveness in New York, she sort of said, just, you know, sometimes you have to find your healing through mourning what was lost. So you know, forgiveness is not the only way. It's not a precondition for putting your life together again. Sometimes you have to just mourn what was lost. But if you can forgive, it would appear to make things better for the person doing the forgiving. And we have seen examples, you know, say in Northern Ireland after Enniskillen, there was Gordon Wilson forgiving his daughter's murders. There were other people there too. I quoted a guy, Stephen Ross, who then was 15, very badly injured. And he said that he realised that if he let anger take root in his life against the terrorists, that this would ultimately consume him. So he forgave them. The thing to go about both Stephen Ross and Gordon Wilson is they also have a fairly strong religious belief, so they have kind of a belief that things will be kind of worked out in the end. A lot of people don't have a religious belief, so it's harder, I think, for them. It's a kind of letting go and a feeling that I'm letting the other person go, but I'm doing it for myself. And that's the whole, to me, that's the important thing. And you can empathise with the other person. It's a big ask. It's not an easy thing. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's the only way out of the tunnel that you're in.
Well, Pádraig O'Moran, Irish Times contributor and, of course, mental health practitioner and counsellor, thank you indeed for joining us. Now, in the early hours of this morning, the Health Service executive suffered an unprecedented, highly sophisticated cyber attack, which has impacted virtually every single one of its systems and has prompted the shutdown of its information technology network. To discuss this, I'm joined on the line now by breaking news journalist at independent.ie, Owen Maloney. Owen, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Ciara.
This is an extraordinary turn of events. Talk them through the timeline as we know it.
So it's approximated at about 4 o'clock this morning that the HSE realised that their IT system had been compromised centrally. And what most cybersecurity experts are saying, they did the right thing and just shut everything down. Because as soon as an attack like this occurs, the best thing to do is just mitigate against it and just shut everything down. And that's effectively what the HSE did. And it was announced at about 6 or 7 a.m. this morning that the Rotunda Maternity Hospital would be cancelling most of its appointments today due to an IT issue. And it later transpired that the entire HSE IT system had been compromised by this malware.
And the Rotunda has taken the step to cancel all appointments barring for those for women who are more than 36 week pregnant. And individual maternity hospitals have taken their own decisions based on conditions locally. I know the Coombe is operating as normal, and the vast majority of services in the Dublin Midlands Hospital Group, which includes us here in County Kildare, continue to operate in physical terms, whatever about the impact of the lack of availability of IT and the individual services. The HSE Chief Executive Paul Reid, Owen, is telling people who have appointments to continue to turn up.
Yeah, it seems to be that most of the machinery and kind of operational functions of the hospital are still working, and this was a centralised attack on the data centres of the HSE in an attempt to encrypt the data within it and then hold it to ransom. So it wasn't as if they've attacked the machinery of the HSE. So the HSE itself is still somewhat operational. Now, it will be severely impacted in some respects just due to lack of data and loot. You basically have to move back to the old ages, and it's paper, pen and paper records for patients. And you can obviously understand in a health service that's already severely under pressure, well, somewhat recovering, but in a health service that's in the situation that it's in, not having access to digital records can set you back a serious degree.
And the thing about an attack such as this is it's not occurring in a defined space of time. The attack continues and could last for several days.
Absolutely, and Minister of State Responsibility for e-government, Oisin Smith, has said that also last night, interestingly, that the Department of Health was the subject of attacks. And there was also a separate type of attack. A distributed denial of services attack was implemented on the HSE. Now, these could have been like tester attacks to see what way the security or the protection would act, and the hackers can then react to that. So this seems to be, it's also a human-driven one. Like some malware and some ransomware like this can just kind of be left into a network and left just basically encrypt everything it comes into contact with, whereas this one is human-driven, so it can be manipulated by human actors, and that appears to be the case.
Actually, interestingly, I saw a DDoS attack, which is of the type that you just alluded to there, reported by Black Knight, which operates a huge number or hosts a huge number of websites and servers in the UK and Ireland also in the last couple of days. So it's an interesting coincidence of events, shall we say. But this matter, though, is under investigation by the Gardaí because of the suspected, or because of the clear criminal element involved. And we understand, Owen, that no ransom demand has yet been made.
It hasn't been yet been made, but I would probably argue it's that it hasn't been found. Usually this ransom will be written within the source code of the attack, and because once the attack was found, the HSE shut down all their systems, they may not have come across this yet, or if they have, they might just may not have basically released this information yet, because it is under investigation by the Gardaí, so for operational reasons, they may not be releasing that information. But usually the ransom is, it's the economic justification of it, it's already within the code. And basically, it's kind of like the dirty secret of the industry is that a lot of companies, now this is a state agency, obviously it would raise a serious quandary as to whether they would pay it. You'd imagine they definitely won't even consider paying it, but a lot of companies will just brush it under the carpet and pay the fine. So we saw the US pipeline, Colonial, it's one of the biggest pipelines in the US, that was crippled late last week and early this week by an attack similar enough to this. And a US official confirmed that hackers requested $25 million for the release of the controls, but eventually it was negotiated down to $5 million and they did pay that. So a lot of these attacks are paid, and as you said, it can last days. The attacks can kind of go on, and who knows, I know Leo Bracker has talked about that this will drag on into the weekend and possibly into next week before this is resolved.
Which will mean that regardless of whether a ransom demand is found or paid or whatever happens at that particular facet of this story, that in terms of the people that use the HSE as service users, as patients, the effects are going to be much longer lived. Not necessarily because of delayed appointments or anything like that, but if you're getting a test done today, the results won't be able to be read, so therefore there can be no treatment plan plotted for you.
Absolutely. Just say, for instance, if you have allergies, you may not, if a patient has allergies, if you can't access digital records, you don't know what medication to give them. If you are between the age of 50 and 69 today, you can register on the online vaccination portal. And they're saying you can ring the helpline to do so, but if that drags on, you just won't be able to be issued a date for your vaccination. The longer it drags on, the more complications it brings for the health service, and it just be more and more and more headaches on just kind of compounding on top of each other. So, as I understand, the government have enlisted a world-class cybersecurity firm to help them, and they'll basically pick through the network subsection by subsection. They will go through to see what files have been corrupted, what haven't. But apparently this kind of malware, this ransomware, is very insidious and can kind of hide its motives and kind of hide how it got in and hide what it has encrypted. So this could be very hard and kind of very arduous for the people involved going through this to find out what has been encrypted, what hasn't, and kind of what's safe to reopen again, what systems are safe to reopen. Because if you do reopen it too soon, then you've encrypted something that you didn't have to.
Mm. Is this incident, Owen, any reflection on the value or not placed on cybersecurity by the HSE and indeed the state?
It appears no. This was I call it a zero-day threat, so this has never been seen before. This appears to be, I hate using the term, but it is true. It appears to be a new variant of cyber virus. I know. But it appears to be a new variant. So this is a new variant of from the family of ransomware that this is used. So this appears to be brand new. The HSE, as I've heard, have had everything up to date that they should have had up to date. And it was just, there was not much that could have been done about this.
Well, Owen Maloney, breaking news journalist with independent.ie, thank you indeed for joining us to bring us up to speed on this evolving story, and do stay with us on KFM News throughout the day for more on this as we have it. Coming up after the break, we'll be talking about COVID-19 incidence rates in both the Newbridge local electoral area and the Kildare local electoral area, and we'll be talking scams and how to avoid them. We're moving on to scams, which ones you should be aware of and how to avoid them. Conor Feehan is a journalist with the Irish Independent, and he has analysed just this very topic. He joins me on the line. Conor, you're welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
The thing about scams is they're getting increasingly more sophisticated, even if they're just your common or garden phone or email scam.
We will all remember a time when we used to get emails from foreign princes
wanting to give us a king's ransom.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, these were probably so obvious, and we almost remember them with fondness now when we consider the sophistication of modern-day scams. But, that doesn't exist anymore. We don't see those type of scams anymore because they're so obvious. But I think, personally, one of the most frightening things about the way these fraudsters operate is that they know we are now all scam aware. So the most popular scams you will see rolling out now are ones that use that fear against us. And we would call it the "you have been scammed" scam, where you get a notification on your phone or on your email alerting you that your bank account has been compromised, it has been shut down because the bank want to reset your codes and your settings in order to avoid a fraud. And naturally we all get fearful and we think, well, if this is a message from the bank, we better heed it. And the social protection public notification that you just broadcast there before would be something similar, where scammers are ringing people and looking for their PPS numbers so they can use that number then to create a fake account with revenue and steal money from revenue pretending to be you, basically.
The insidious things about these is that the language is the language we would expect our bank or the Department of Social Protection to use. If they're coming in by text message, they're in the format that we expect. If they're coming in by email, they contain embedded logos and this, that and the other. They look the real deal.
They do, and you know, they'd be sort of, you know, you'd read a message and, you know, click on this link in order to reset your passwords and that kind of thing. And the advice that's been given to us by the Gardaí in relation to this is, if you get a message like that, well, first of all, if your bank thinks that you have been scammed, the best thing you can do is hang up your phone look up the number of your bank independently. Don't trust one on that piece of information you've been given, because it could be just the customers trying to get you to call them. Look up the number of your bank independently and ring them and ask them, has your account been compromised? Banks will not communicate with people looking for their financial information by text or by email, and they will never look for PIN numbers. So look, if your bank account has been compromised some way, you know, ring the bank and ask them, or wait in the morning and ring them, but don't go inputting any codes or any PIN numbers or PPS numbers into any website just on the basis that somebody contacted you to tell you that that there has been a fraud committed on your account.
Some of the others that you're highlighting, Conor, are the cheaper than cheap scam, the investment scam, the invoice fraud, and the can I use your bank account scam. How does that one work?
Can I use your bank account scam? Well, that's one that's been it's been hitting young people an awful lot, and that's where you actually agree to do something. And this is hitting a lot of young people, young students, and people as young as 15 have been kind of lured by this. In a sense, it's not a scam in that money is stolen from their account. This is where somebody like a young student or somebody in school is approached by somebody that they know or half know or is a friend of a friend.
Yeah.
Or what sometimes has happened is vulnerable people have been approached by somebody saying they haven't been able to set up a bank account themselves yet, and they're trying to transfer money to their uncle back in a different country, and could they use their bank account to do it? And basically, it's under a promise of a few hundred quid for yourself. You might have a suspicion that it's slightly dodgy, but you agree to it. And young people can fall for this, because the lure of 300 or 400 euro for somebody who's 17 or 18 years old is quite strong, you know.
And technically, they're agreeing to it, but they really don't understand the minutiae of that to which they're agreeing.
Exactly. Because what happens then is they hand over their bank card and their bank details to this person on the understanding that it's going to be temporarily used. Maybe money will go in and money will go out and they'll make a few hundred quid. And it all sounds very simple and it doesn't seem like anybody's going to get hurt. But there are people getting arrested every day in this country for being a money mule. It is illegal, because what basically happens is these criminal gangs are putting stolen money into your account and then either taking it out directly with your bank card from an ATM or transferring it on further to a different account elsewhere. You are the one who is then left carrying the can because your account has been used with your permission to commit a fraud, and you would be charged with money laundering. Now, we get press releases every day from the Gardaí about people being arrested in relation to money laundering offences.
Actually, the frequency of those releases, Conor, seems to have surged in the last few months.
It is daily at this stage. You know, I don't think there's a day goes by we don't get some sort of an email from the Gardaí about an investigation into money laundering fraud or an arrest or a charge in relation to money laundering fraud. It's so widespread that that's why the Department of Social Protection had to take out that ad on the radio, because what was happening there was people were getting an 083 message on their phones, and when they would open it, there would be information on a potential fraud, and they would press a number, or they would, you know, they would press a number and get a call or get through to somebody who, a human voice, who sounds very authoritative on the end of the phone. That's how cheeky these people are. They will talk to you down your phone line and tell you that there has been a fraud committed and you need to change your numbers and give us your codes and we'll change them for you. They are not afraid of talking to you down the phone line.
Well, I suppose we all of us, it's a lesson to us to be ever vigilant. Conor Feehan, journalist at the Irish Independent and writing extensively on this matter and in that paper. Thank you indeed for joining us. But as you will have heard earlier today, I was speaking with Clem on Kildare today about the 14-day local electoral area incidence rate. That in Newbridge is 3 times the national figure. Neighbouring Kildare local electoral area also has a very high figure. And I'm joined on the line now to discuss this by Newbridge-based GP and Kildare representative for the Irish College of General Practitioners, Brendan O'Shea. Brendan, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
Now, we heard earlier this week, or it emerged earlier this week, that the Kildare as a county has now surpassed Donegal in having the highest COVID-19 incidence rate in Ireland. The thing to remember this is that while I would imagine these figures are statistically important, they're based as a proportion of your population, and they're only so indicative of the situation as you and your colleagues are experiencing it.
Well, certainly the figures tally with what we're seeing in practice and in on KDOC and are out of our service. Things remain very busy. People are presenting, and children are presenting, with a range of viral illnesses, including standard regular cold and runny noses and viral gastroenteritis. And that's been very apparent in the last week particularly. So we're not surprised by the figures. Certainly unhappy that we appear to be outliers in the context of the rest of the country.
And indeed of the rest of the county, because that kind of that band of mid-Kildare's, its experience, the Newbridge local electoral area and the Kildare local electoral area, seems to be at odds with the experience in the extreme north and extreme south of the county.
Well, I suppose what we have these figures, and what do the figures actually mean? So there is an increased rate of new infections identified. We can speculate. We could say, for example, that the good people of Newbridge and Kildare are being very quick at getting themselves tested, and perhaps they're quicker and better and more forthright than the other towns around the county. So cheers for the people in Kildare and Newbridge, but that's certainly one take on it.
Mm.
There are other takes on it as well, and reflect the fact that, well, certainly Newbridge and Kildare are very busy towns with a predominantly younger demographic than maybe some of the other towns, and certainly that may be relevant to why we're seeing what we're seeing. Also, the level of activity, both recreational and in relation to work. Also, Newbridge is a reasonably densely populated area. It's hateful to say that possibly are the people in Newbridge and Kildare not minding themselves as well as other people in the other towns in the county. So we are wondering about what might be behind these figures. But one thing for sure is these figures need to be taken quite seriously. And it's far more useful to look ahead and see, well, what should we be doing in Kildare and Newbridge to turn this around?
Do you have any sense as to what those things might be, Brendan?
In terms of what we should do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think at this point, as we're moving out of tight lockdown and opening up, anybody who has any symptoms needs to get tested really quickly. And we're certainly seeing in practice that people are attending 2 or 3 days into a cough, cold, runny nose. We need to tighten that up. If you've got a temperature, if you've got a runny nose, if you feel like you're coming down with the flu, we have a fantastic testing system. Get tested soon and isolate is the second thing. And we're certainly seeing in our consultations that people are a bit amazed and astounded that, yes, you need to have a test and you need to isolate until you get your test result. Those two pieces of advice span 3 or 4 days of activity. And if people who have viral respiratory tract infections are out and about, they are going to cause things to take off again.
Mm.
Okay, so that's certainly an area to pull up. The other thing is I mean, the human interest side of it, my God, we've all been locked up. And now in this last 10 days or 2 weeks, we're moving towards opening up. But it's not back to normal. Okay, so absolutely exercise caution. Okay, keep the 2 metres where you can. Be very slow to throw away your face mask. Be aware of all that same advice. It's still very relevant.
Well, Newbridge GP Dr. Brendan O'Shea, thank you indeed for joining us there. And I just wanted to put a tiny bit of context on those figures. Yes, the Newbridge local electoral area incidence rate is 3.5, almost 3.5 times the national rate. There were 147 people diagnosed with COVID-19 in the electoral area now. That's Newbridge and its wide hinterland in that 2 week period. That's out of a population of 35,000 people. And then neighbouring Kildare local electoral area, the incidence rate there is 315. 81 people diagnosed with COVID-19 in that two-week period. That's out of a population of 25,000. And as Brendan said, vigilance is still very, very much needed. Now, to stay on this matter, I'm joined on the line now by Fianna Fáil councillor Anne Connolly. She's a councillor with the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District in both areas affected there. Anne, you're very welcome to the programme. We're discussing the incidence rates in the both of the electoral, local electoral areas that, that you represent. And we noted some comments about lockdown that, that you were making in the Independent, saying that you don't know if the people of County Kildare could cope with another lockdown. Is one on the cards insofar as you know?
No, but if you recall that when the numbers were so high in Donegal, I can't recall exactly the politician that made a point of maybe we need to be looking at sort of areas or regional lockdowns again. And I remember saying at the time, because there we weren't doing too well and we're not doing too well. And I said, well, hopefully we do not come to that, because and I have heard it said that people would not be able for another lockdown in Kildare. Like, I mean, this last lockdown has had huge consequences with everybody across the board. But it must remember that this was Kildare's fourth lockdown, because we were down for 3 weeks there last year. And that was a very tough period of time for the people of County Kildare. And certainly to even put out a comment like that, well, it's frightening for people to even be thinking.
It is.
Like
now,
that,
the Chief Medical Officer, Tony Houlihan, did note earlier this week that Kildare is among four areas of concern, Donegal and I think Dublin and one other county, possibly Westmeath. I'm open to correction on that. And they're being monitored. He didn't at any point suggest that, that additional restrictions might be in place. But it's natural, Anne, for anybody listening to this kind of data to assume that that's what NPHET and government might consider doing.
Yeah, and to be fair now, it definitely wasn't NPHET and that made that comment. As I said, rather than me mention who said it, in case I get it wrong, but it was definitely a mention of, particularly for Donegal, you know, are going forward, that these areas that would have high incident rates, that they would lock them down. And look at, we all acknowledge the wonderful work that's going on now within the vaccination area, and that is our get out tool, let's just say. And you know, people need to be very mindful, still need to be very, very careful, still need to adhere to the guidelines. And if everybody just did that, adhering to the guidelines, vaccinating, if you're vaccinated or not, we will get out of this then together, and no more lockdown, you know.
Well, Fianna Fáil councillor for the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Anne Connolly, thank you indeed for joining us. Coming up after the break, I'll be joined by Managing Director of the National Ploughing Championships, Anna May McHugh. The confirmation that the Ploughing Trade Exhibition, that is, I suppose, the commercial element of the National Ploughing Championships, will not proceed as had been planned this September in Rathanesca. It's the second year in a row that element of the programme won't proceed. I'm joined now to discuss this by Managing Director of the National Ploughing Championships, Anna May McHugh. Anna, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much for having me on.
It's a difficult decision for you all.
It was extremely difficult, and we have been monitoring all the guidelines for the last number of months. Now we have reached the stage at this point in time when we could hold out no longer, because we had so many exhibitors phoning us to know what's happening. We have to order products if it's going ahead. More, some of them saying, and we hope it is, because it'll be a kickstart back to business and the opportunity to, it's a shop window to promote their products and in the hope that it would be selling as well. So for everybody, not just alone for the exhibitors, but for ourselves as a national voluntary organisation, for exhibitors, for patrons, we're having phone calls from patrons too, who were organising their holidays to go to the event. event and all of that. But generally, it's a very big disappointment.
And the scale of the event, which you would have been, I suppose, expected in many ways to put on at a time when there is vast uncertainty about what COVID-19 restrictions could be in 2 months, in 3 months, to say nothing of September, when Ireland has yet to stage trial, spectator or large attendance events, was just too much.
It's just too much, and we, at this stage now, we would have maybe two-thirds of our exhibition booked. And, you know, we couldn't even send out applications to exhibitors. But the uncertainty and no roadmap for September, if we were reduced to a small attendance, well, I don't think patrons or exhibitors or anybody would be satisfied, you know, because the cost of running the event is in the region of 6 million. And we couldn't afford to go so far and maybe then be told that you're going to be restricted to 10,000, you know. And I have to say on behalf of the association that public health and safety is of paramount importance to the association. And unless the NPA were confident that the trade exhibition could go ahead without causing any risk to exhibitors or competitors or visitors, it would not be feasible. You know, and the timeline to start working on the site is imminent, nearly, because we have to have the engineers in and a lot of the steel roadway that comes in. That all has to come in by the end of July. So the timeline in the lead-in, it's just, you know, even at this moment of time, we're well behind time.
Because I think people, the patrons of the championship, people who may watch it from afar, forget that every year that this goes ahead, Anna May, you're building a village.
Oh, absolutely. We're building a village. When one would say over the 3 days, like we had 297,000 people over the 3 days in 2019. And then this year, it was the 90th year of our national ploughing. And for that occasion, we were granted the hosting of the World Ploughing, which we had to cancel this week as well, because the competitors that would be coming in from 30 to 33 countries, the Australians, New Zealanders, the Canadians, the Americans, they can't bring in their equipment, like their tractors and ploughs. So we had to send out word to all our World Ploughing affiliates that we were cancelling the event, which is a big, big loss to us, because we may not get it again. The World event is fixed up to 2037. So it would be wonderful if we could get to host again, but some of the countries would have to opt out in order for that to happen.
The ramifications, Anna May, of the decision not to hold the ploughing this year out of your hands, as I think most people would know that it is, will have implications and ripple effects far beyond the ploughing, given the sheer volume of trade that is done there.
The volume of trade is tremendous. It can't be underestimated. We would have about 1,700 exhibitors. And in addition to that, every bed in Laois and surrounding areas like Offaly, Kilkenny, Carlow, you know, there wouldn't be a bed available for the week of the ploughing. We had to cancel a number of hotels this morning because we had everything booked and, you know, hoping against hope that things might happen for us. But look, it's a big loss to the tourist trade and to the hotels as well, as it is for other people, the contractors, you know, the electricians, all the tent suppliers, huge amount of marquees on site. Out of the 1,700 exhibitors, I'm sure you could say there'd be 500 or 600 marquees on site. And it's a big loss to them, and it's a big loss to the economy too, and to the exchequer. You're talking about in excess of 50 million of a loss to the economy, you know.
It's a very, very significant sum. You aren't resting on your laurels, though, Anna May. You've already confirmed the dates for the ploughing in 2022. You're staying loyal to Rathenisca.
Absolutely. Rathenisca have been very good. And I will have to say and commend the landowners there. They have been very helpful, very understanding to us in this situation, and extremely sorry for us that we had to make this decision in the interest of health and safety. But yes, we are staying with Rathenisca for next year. And hopefully, you know, that we will be able to run a very successful event with little or no restrictions crowd-wise. I want to say as well, Ciara, that we do intend this year to run the ploughing competitions, on the 5th, from the 15th to the 17th of September, which will at least give some consolation to the county ploughing associations throughout the country that they can send forward their competitors for competition purposes. And that is something that we can monitor very carefully, and we can, you know, cater for them because we have the land, but also if there are still restrictions, well, we are in total control then. We can restrict the numbers from each county, say competitors only, you know, and that would be a very small attendance.
But you've had to take all of these decisions, Anna May, you and your team essentially alone, because you've had little or no engagement or guidance from government.
None. We tried to get engagement. We tried to get on the committee that Minister Catherine Martin was setting up, because we felt that we would have some contribution to bring to the table as organisers of the biggest rural event, outdoor rural event in Europe. We thought we'd have something worthwhile. We asked, would we be considered for the committee, and we got no response to that. Rural Ireland was let down, really. I feel rural Ireland was let down, and I'm working with the National Ploughing Association for a huge number of years, and I can honestly say I am generally disappointed with the fact that we had no engagement at all with the government. We'd been on to the Taoiseach's office, the Taoiseach's office, the Minister for Agriculture, the Minister for Tourism, and we got two phone calls from the Minister for Agriculture, but it was too little too late. One was this morning now at 10:25, and the other was last week, last Wednesday.
So from your perspective, beyond the 11th hour?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I have no hesitation in saying that, despite the fact, Ciara, that I think it was 10 or 12 government departments that exhibit at the National Ploughing Championships, and we are delighted to have them. Mm. But I must also say that we went out of our way, particularly in 2019, when they all wanted to be located 1, 2, 3 up along together, side by side. We were very inconvenient by doing that, but we did that just to, you know, to make it impressive for them. And it was good for us too that they were exhibiting, because they were there to answer queries from patrons, you know, as well as the support that we get from all the patrons from all over Ireland and mm-hmm. from overseas. We get a lot of exhibitors and patrons from overseas. Sure, Enterprise Ireland in 2019 brought in prospective buyers from 21 countries. That in itself, like, is a loss to the economy and to the people that would be exhibiting. But we went out of our way to facilitate all the government departments and to place, position them side by side. And in doing all that, you know, I just have to say I am really, really disappointed with the reception that we got from the government.
Well, Anna May McHugh, Managing Director at the National Ploughing Championships, thank you indeed for joining us.